24/7.
Like a fresh towel.
Roratour Pharmaceutical, makers of the world's leading tablet for gas.
Fascinating.
Was in trouble.
My empire is crumbling!
They needed a new product.
We might be releasing the most effective antidepressant ever.
Go on.
They don't have my notes with me.
They needed it now.
Is it ready for production?
Yes, sir. It's ready to go.
Have there been any side effects?
Yes, sir. A few side effects.
Woo-hoo! Is this the result we're looking for?
Paramount Pictures and Lakeshore Entertainment present the first motion picture from the kids in the hall.
We think that everyone should have access to it, like ghetto children. Apparently their lives are horrible.
If you know them, you know what to expect.
Really kinky stuff, like two dogs making love with a cat.
If you don't...
Hey, you kids, get out from under that lady's dress.
We apologize in advance. Oh, David Foley.
So your dad's dead. Yeah. Hey, is that eggnog?
Bruce McCullough.
Something wrong?
No.
Kevin McDonald.
Were the handcuffs totally necessary, officer?
That was your husband's idea.
Mark McKinney.
The baby kicked.
May I please?
Did you feel that?
Scott Thompson.
I'll be good. I'll learn to like hockey.
Five guys.
Mrs. Herdiger.
Get out of my head! Get out of my head!
Multiple personalities.
Do you think I look too feminine?
One movie. The Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy.
It's got your eyes, and it's got features that look like various friends of mine. Hey!
Hello, welcome to Movie Humpers. My name is Bob Jam.
I'm Angela.
And the sounds you hear may be dogs. It is April, and we're at the end of the first week of April, and all April long. We're revisiting our awkward laughter theme, which we talked about before. We talked about spoof, like slapsticky comedies. This year for awkward laughter, we got a new theme called Awkward Laughter to the Flop.
Mm-hmm.
And we are reanalyzing some comedies that happened in our lifetime that did not hit it in the box office very well. They did not perform great. But looking back, some of them maybe went on to become... Bruce, go take it somewhere else. They maybe went on to become more cult successes.
Oh, definitely.
And Bruce, not Bruce McCullough, one of the stars in this movie, that is our dog, who is all over the house, like at top speed right now, just throwing things around. So, yeah, the flop. These movies did not make money. He is going insane.
The other ones are trying to get him under control, but it's not working.
Now, this movie, though, I don't think it made its money back.
Mm-mm.
At only a fairly low budget of its time for $8 million.
I heard one of them comment that they weren't allowed to make the new season of the show until this movie did make all of its money back, and that's why it took 20 years for them to make more kids in the home.
That was the joke of the new show.
Yeah.
Because then the new show, they're at a garage sale, and they buy a used copy,
and
VHS
it's
copy.
The one.
And it's the one that finally they managed to make the money back.
Yeah, it just infamously lost all its money.
But, yeah, we're talking about the Kids in the Hall and their 1996 movie Brain Candy, directed by Kelly Macon, a longtime collaborator and show director, written by Norm Hiscock, as well as 4 out of 5 of the Kids in the Hall. And it stars, can you name them all?
Dave Foley.
Yeah.
Bruce McCullough.
Right.
McKinney.
What's his first name?
Mark McKinney.
Yeah.
I'm truly going blank on literally my favorite one.
Wow, they're really your favorite.
Scott
then.
Thompson.
Right.
And Kevin McDonald.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. And
I had it.
And when I was a kid, I fucking loved the Kids in the Hall. When we first got cable in our little rural area, Comedy Central was called Ha. And one of the first things that they put, that I remember them putting on the channels, was Kids in the Hall. It was just something that would come on. And Kids in the Hall was like Lorne Michaels' other skit comedy show. Yeah. SNL was more famous, but the Kids in the Hall was like the Canadian version of that. Between the Kids in the Hall and people from SCTV like John Candy and Martin Short, when I was a kid, I actually was like, wow, Canada must be the funniest place ever. right?
Yeah.
Because I got to admit, I got a lot of my favorite humor back in the day. Canadians made it.
I had never seen this, and this movie was coming out, and my best friend at the time was obsessed with The Kids in the Hall. And I spent the night at her house two nights in a row, and we stayed up all night watching every episode.
The entire series.
Of Kids in the Hall.
So you burned through Kids in the Hall.
Yes. So by the time I got to this movie, it was like the best movie ever, because I had just truly been like, it's like immersed. I had had, yeah, Kids in the Hall like shot into my veins.
I also saw this movie in the theaters because I was a fan in 1996.
You were 15?
That sounds about
right.
I was
16.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was just us and whoever we were with at that time is the only people I know.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember anyone else being in the theater.
And saw this movie.
Yeah.
Now, I got to say, like, the movie seemed like it was made for us. It's like an extended Kids in the Hall episode with more money behind it. But I have to wonder if people just walked into this blind, like, they don't know who the Kids in the Hall were, and this was their introduction. Would it appeal to them? Would it connect with them? Would they get the humor, the style, the... There's so many things about Kids in the Hall that seem like... Well, Scott Thompson alone, my two favorite are Scott Thompson and Bruce McCullough.
Same. Scott Thompson's my total favorite.
Scott Thompson is kind of... I remember being a kid watching Kids in the Hall and Scott Thompson doing his buddy monologues and shit like that, like... This was the first time that maybe someone was just gay.
Yep.
And it would be played up for laughs, of course, maybe some stereotypical stuff.
But he was also cool.
But he was also just a part of these guys. Like, I saw these guys being cool as shit. Mm-hmm. And and just very creative. And Scott's just hanging with these guys.
Yeah.
And it's often when you see people, like, being gay in something, it ends up being something extremely melodramatic or something like that. Yeah. And it was very refreshing at the time to just have a guy that was just gay, and he would laugh about it, but it wasn't, like, a big deal to anybody else.
Well, and they would talk about it in a roundabout way all of the time. One of my favorite sketches is when they're all being themselves, and he's picking out different parts of each of their bodies to make the perfect man. And they are like arguing with each other, like, well, why do you want my eyes? Why don't you want my butt?
He's just kind of was just kind of a parent. Like, that seemed very ahead of its time,
mm-hmm.
you know, to just exist as a gay person without it being some kind of like greater moral tell or being some kind of like intense, I don't know, story about someone dying of AIDS or some shit, you know.
That's what it felt like most of what was happening in the 90s.
Absolutely.
Though, for sure. You were sick or you were homeless. Like, there was always something terrible happening.
And it was through the early days of Comedy Central and basic cable as it became more and more popular in homes that Kids in the Hall was introduced to the U.S. audiences. I think there's a lot of people around our age that if we kind of surveyed that, you know, we know people that, I mean, they, some years back, they came to the Ryman, and I think they had a sold out show and did live show and stuff. I feel like maybe they could have made more money if they didn't have Kids in the Hall colon in it. Like, if they just called this movie Brain Candy and just stuck it out and, like, let people just kind of find their way to it. Because Kids in the Hall kind of, I get you want to pull in the people that are already on board.
But they're going to know.
But I do think the idea of, like, if people weren't that familiar with it and they saw Kids in the Hall colon or Brain Candy, then that might be more of a, you know, if they didn't have an experience with it, they might feel intimidated to dive into something that they'd heard of, but they just didn't know much about.
Or if all you hear is the name of that, they might have thought it was a fucking kid show.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know. If you don't know what the Kids in the Hall are, you don't know, like, this is a mature movie. I mean, there are people who didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, my parents had no fucking clue who they were.
I really do think they would have done at least a little bit better if they just called it Brain Candy.
I agree.
And just put it out there and let it be a comedy that people take in.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think that.
I agree.
Looking at the trailer to this movie, which we play at the beginning of every episode, There are jokes in the trailer. I think they cut a lot out. We have a couple of cameos. One of Brendan Fraser, who's taking placebos for this drug. And I'll summarize the whole plot and even the end. And then we'll just kind of get into our favorite characters. Like, this isn't one we need to just crawl through.
No.
But, and then there's a part where Janine Garofalo has a cameo. And they cut a lot of that out. And in the trailer, like, there's jokes in the trailer that seem to be cut from the actual movie. Like, remember the character, and the characters were on the show too, where you had the little short guy and his girlfriend, and she's like, "You're not getting any of this." She's pointing at her coo. Like, there's more jokes in the trailer about them.
It's got your eyes, and it's got features that look like various friends of mine.
And I actually love those characters.
Yeah.
Oh
my gosh.
So yeah, this movie could have been probably like a half hour. I'm wondering how much they cut, but it's weird that they would cut Janine Garofalo stuff, because in 1996 she's a pretty big star.
Absolutely.
Isn't she in like Must Love Dogs and shit?
It was called The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
Right, right.
I love that was like one of Uma Thurman's first movies.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So let me summarize the plot here. It's very simple. There's these scientists, they develop drugs for a company. I forget the name of the company, but they develop a drug that cures depression.
Yes.
And it's called, they go into through the marketing and of course, as the kids in the hall do, they're playing multiple characters throughout the show.
Absolutely.
It's what they do. And the very cynical marketing guy and the CEO, they kind of pressure the head scientist, as played by Kevin McDonald, to go ahead and say the drug is ready. So he does, and they've had positive tests. So they put out this thing, and they call it Gleamanex, and it cures depression.
Yeah.
And so we've got all these characters, which we've been coming back around to. They'll start off sad and be dealing with stuff, and then the drug actually helps them. Until at some point, they realize that there are side effects where the people who take Gleamanex, they slip into comas and they're stuck in their happiest memory. So then they have to kind of do damage control. And that's when they go from like the price of fame to trying to find their moral footing. The movie is very much attacking like cynical marketing ploys. Like this is the movie itself. The message overall is actually kind of great.
Yeah.
In terms of anti-corporatism, anti-marketing, anti-cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's like an end goal that's like they managed to manipulate and make the drug over the counter, but there's a thing that's like, you know, this drug is meant for people who are so depressed that like it's very dangerous for them.
Yeah.
And when people just start popping it like candy, it's like the movie almost makes the case for being sad sometimes.
It literally says that at the end.
Yeah.
The only way to be happy is to know you won't be happy every single day. La 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 la. It sounds better in the original Croatian.
They also, at one point, they're making Gleamanex for dogs. There's also the like industry response of, we're not going to try to fix this or take this off the market. What we're going to do instead is now build these huge happiness homes, which are basically nursing homes for your people who are in a coma now because of Gleamanex.
Yeah.
So then they're making even more money because now you're paying to put your people there who are stuck in their happiness comas.
And they have coma parades and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the movie. And of course, it's just comedy all the way through. But, you know, the comedy here, it's just like very well-crafted, well-done skit comedy. Yes. It's not like, it's very influential to like the modern kind of absurd comedy that we kind of were talking about with Cabin Boy. But it's actually so much sharper, so much more measured at the same time. It's done in ways in which you think about it. Now, the marketing is disgusting that they do for Gleamanex, but mm-hmm. I think I would try the drug. What do you think, if you were hooked on Gleamanex and you went to a coma in your happiest spot, what is your happiest point?
Oh my gosh. It might be in San Francisco when we got married.
I think ultimately that whole day was a wonderful day.
Yeah.
And other than that, I remember when I realized that I was going to the theater to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in like 1990.
Yeah.
That would probably be a very happy moment. But
for sure.
But my wedding day And I'm not just saying that because she's sitting here.
Or because I said it.
That was a beautiful, a strangely beautiful day.
Yeah, we were so happy.
Yeah, that I think we would both be trapped in that day.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the Eastern European lady who was very sweet and picking our flowers for us. And the homeless men sleeping in the lawn of the San Francisco City Hall being very, like, congratulatory and nice to us as we were walking around town. Because everyone knew that we had just gotten married. Like, everywhere we went, people were just, like, very nice to us.
Well, we went, after we got the flowers, we were wearing our clothes, and we went to that little restaurant, and they gave us free, what's that, like, what's the things you get in the French Quarter? Those little donuts. They gave us free beignets because they knew we were getting married. And, like, people in the restaurant were, like, congratulating us. We hadn't even gotten married yet.
It was very nice.
Yeah.
It was.
And we eloped. So, like, we didn't have to deal with any, like, family bullshit or, like, anything.
Yeah. I thought our family would be kind of mad at us. Actually, our friends were a little more mad.
Yeah, our friends were more mad.
Which was flattering in its own way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that what a beautiful day that was. I guess that's our happy coming. That's where we would go. So let's talk about some of the characters that we get throughout this. It's you got the guy who he's pitching a drug and he's trying to sell a drug that gives worms to ex-girlfriends.
I've invented a pill that gives worms to ex-girlfriends.
Right, and what's positive about that?
Well, it's a pill that gives worms to ex-girlfriends.
The guy goes,
well, could it also give worms to ex-boyfriends?
This is a drug for the world to give worms to ex-girlfriends.
You just don't get it.
I think what makes that character or that whole bit is when he's leaving and he's like,
you just don't get it here.
Just so completely exasperated. And then you've got the Scott Thompson character of the closeted gay dad. And
his wife knows he's gay. His kids know.
His wife's coming home, like, where's dad? He's upstairs is masturbating to gay porn. Like, and he thinks it's such a secret. Well, eventually he takes Gleeman X. He's assigned it in the hopes that
the psychiatrist
hopes that it'll just make him accept being gay.
I love that therapy session too, because the therapist is truly like, you are gay. Everyone knows it except you. And he's like, well, why don't I know it?
Yeah.
Well, you're in denial.
So he takes it and it breaks out into an I'm gay musical number.
I love this.
I'm gay.
They're all happy that he just is being himself and is gay.
Mm-hmm.
And they all already knew it. And they're truly like, it's no big fucking deal.
Dave Foley, of course, they all play multiple roles. Dave Foley plays the right-hand guy of the CEO is played by Mark McKinney. Yes. And Bruce McCullough is the, like, the hip, flashy, but dirtbag marketing guy.
Yeah.
There's a point where Mark McKinney's talking about, they've developed something called Stummies, which is like a digestive fucking...
It looks like Tums.
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to come up with stuff, and they make this joke that's like...
To answer your question, Natalie, the board of directors was a little concerned that we didn't have a back-to-school drug or Christmas drug.
We didn't have an International Women's Day drug.
Exactly. So...
I feel like that joke's kind of like a little ahead of its time. What else do we got here?
We have... Well, the first patient we meet is patient 957, and this is an older lady played by Scott Thompson who is the first one they give the pill to.
She's a pretty essential character
in this
movie.
She really is, and I love her, and... Her, we get to see her memory. You don't get to see everyone's favorite memory. You see hers, you see Scott Thompson's gay character's favorite memory or best memory. And hers is one of the most memorable scenes, I think, in the whole movie. It's just the first thing I think of when I think of this movie is her family coming to...
Merry Christmas! All that's all right.
Happy
Yeah, sorry we're a few hours late there, Mom, but you know how the kids hate old people.
Oh, well, that's all right, as long as we're all together now, eh?
Yeah, that's the important thing. So how's your health there, Mom? You doing okay?
Oh, good. Just he's a touch of the sciatic. Well, there.
So, here, Dad's dead.
Yeah.
Hey, is that eggnog?
Oh, yeah, go have yourself a glass. I'm gonna go check on the bird.
They're truly in her house for 30 whole seconds. Just like, enough. The kids run in, start ripping up their presents, hate them. The son is like...
just enough
drinking.
To take a shot.
Dry and burn a brain cells. They're the best.
Gotta go. Come on, kids, in the car. Come on, let's go. Yeah, sorry, Mom. We gotta go.
You're
you know,
off.
But hey, you got that gift for my mom?
Oh, yeah. Merry Christmas, Mother Herdick.
Oh!
Come on.
Geez, I wonder what that is.
The harmonica.
Mm-hmm. Well, see you next year. Oh, that was lovely.
She's had such a terrible life that that's like the best thing that's ever happened to her. And she is... so happy.
That's so sad.
I know.
Like, because she's genuinely happy, but her happiest moment is like still a fucking depressing moment. And the scientist, of course, the cast are playing scientists, and Kevin McDonald's character has a relationship with Bruce McCullough's dress as a woman, or they're trying to.
Yeah.
And by the end, they come together. But one of my favorite bit characters here is just a brief Dave Foley character.
This could be it.
Well, it's a strong maybe.
Well, it could be it.
This could be it.
Jesus Christ! I think we got it! Yeah!
And who are you?
Just a guy.
I'm just a guy.
I love him.
We could do the same thing with the actual show itself in
Absolutely.
Terms of just going through our favorite characters and what they've done. And I mean, this move, we were the target audience for this movie. But again, I understand if maybe people who weren't familiar, it really didn't hit for them.
But the crazy thing is, it meant more to me this watch.
Mm-hmm.
Than it did when I was younger, even though I was the target audience for it. And maybe that's because now we're closer to the age they were when they made it, you know?
We're probably a little older now than they
older,
were then,
but,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
We're adults. We've lived some life. We've had some real, honest, true sadness.
We're old now, and they're real old now.
They're
we've
real
seen
old.
You guys. You're old.
But we still love you. It's beautifully colorful, like, the whole way through, right? And even the lab, which could be very grim, they wear like yellow lab coats. There's like these just little touches to where it looks really nice.
Yeah.
But they do this amazing thing where, you know, they're playing multiple characters and occasionally their characters meet each other. You know, there's a scene where Bruce McCullough, as the scientist woman, is in the door talking to Kevin McDonald, and Bruce McCullough's marketing guy is on the stairs in the room, but you know they're not using some crazy like split screen stuff that they might use now.
Yeah.
You know that they're just so clever in the way that they frame these shots that they shot the whole thing one way and then the other so that you can go back and forth, and it's done so seamlessly.
Yeah, and they're definitely used to, I mean, they're used to doing that, and their classic show was a mixture of pre-recorded bits and live performances.
Yeah.
So honestly, this is probably just a little bit easier than like doing a lot of the live stuff back
Absolutely.
In the day. But yeah, and also to me, these guys were so cool when I was a kid. They had a soundtrack to this, and it's very subtly worked through the movie. But let me tell you what bands were on this soundtrack here. And these are bands that were kind of very important to us at the time.
Yeah.
Like Pavement, Matthew Sweet, Liz Phair, They Might Be Giants, Sibo Motto, Tragically Hip, Guided by Voices, Yola Tango, Stereo Lab, The Odds, who had worked with them plenty of times before. And yeah, this does represent kind of what we thought was cool in
Absolutely.
That time.
Yeah.
But now we're old, so what we thought was cool is not cool anymore. But it's okay. We still like it. This is an underrated movie, absolutely.
Yeah.
The critics were pretty split on it. Siskel and Ebert were split on it. Apparently, Gene Siskel thought it was good. He thought it would become more of like a cult midnight movie. And
Fair.
I think there's a truth to that, but I still wish it was. I still feel like it could have been bigger. You know, I'm a little, like, you can actually find this on YouTube. This is one of those movies that you can find on YouTube that someone just posted and no one has taken it down. I think it still deserves a little more cult love than it gets.
Absolutely.
But again, I think beyond the inherent Kids in the Hall audience that was there, it didn't add more to the greater fandom. No. That's why they should have just called it Brain Candy, period. Right? Like, you don't have, like Wayne's World was not called Saturday Night Live's Wayne's World.
No. Yeah.
It wasn't called Saturday Night Live's MacGruber, right?
There's no way that anyone who loves Kids in the Hall would not find out about this without it having their name at the top of it.
Yeah.
There's no way. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Oh, real quick. One of your favorite characters almost got cut out of this movie. Yeah.
And the first nominee is Cancer Boy.
From Yummy.
From his new album, Whistle When You're Low.
Cast fought to keep Cancer Boy and they kept him. You know, Dave Foley, he went on to do like news radio and stuff, but Mark McKinney was an SNL cast member for like a couple of years. Mm-hmm. But I think this movie, unfortunately, was because it didn't do well, kind of did affect some careers going forward, and which is unfortunate. And this, which is why I kind of would love to have it reanalyzed. I mean, I think the fans loved it as they should have.
Absolutely.
But I think when the cast looks back on this movie, I think they're very, you know, in the same way that Adam Resnick and Chris Elliott were with Cabin Boy, that it's not that they're just ashamed of it, but like it was, it kind of also reminds them of maybe some points in which they wish things were a little better than they actually were.
Yeah.
And I kind of understand that. But yes, Cancer Boy, they fought for Cancer Boy. And when they look back, they were like, maybe we should have just let them cut Cancer Boy, especially since obviously so many other cuts occurred.
Yeah,
so,
if they could have cut that and put some of those jokes back in, maybe it would have been better. I don't know.
Because sometimes if you fight with the studio can kind of bury you, you know. So you can kind of be punk rock about it, but at the same time, they'll be like, well, your marketing budget just got cut in half. Congratulations, right? Yeah. So they can just do shit like that.
Yeah.
But one character that I love that didn't appear in the movie that I kind of wish did. I can't remember his name. It's been a long time since I've seen the bits. But you remember the Bruce McCullough character where the little boy who wore the Legend of Zelda hat?
Yes.
And when people would come solicit at his house, he'd just keep them around. And like there was one where there's Bible salesmen.
I eat things for money. I do. I eat seemingly inedible objects for small sums of money.
Well, the scriptures are very...
Okay, I'll eat your Bible. But it'll cost you a lot and take me several days of munching and snacking.
If I had to stick one Kids in the Hall character in here, I think I would have done that. What about you? If you had to pick a Kids in the Hall character that didn't appear...
I would have wanted...
Crushing your head.
Hail to you, wretched bike courier. On streets of shame, choking on car exhaust, just trying to carve out that slice of the American dream with your two-wheeled knife. I pity you. And I crush you. Sorry, nothing personal. I'm apolitical.
I was also a big fan of the metal kids who are like in the band Armada. And then to appease everyone in the band, the band ended up being called something like Armada featuring Herman Pendelchuk or some shit. That was also one of my favorites as well.
I did love the Bruce McCullough metal singer guy this movie, and him, you know, becoming happy at the end and then getting all kinds of awards because everyone was so happy.
I also love Bruce McCullough as the flying pig who entertained people in the bank line.
Wow, what a lineup. But don't worry about it. Look at me. Hi, hi, hi.
Wow, I see the line is thinning out a bit. I guess my work is done here. Bye.
Bye, flying pig.
Bye, flying pig.
I love the flying.
But he died. As we know in continuity, he hit the power lines, and
so he unfortunately could not.
He became bacon, and as I recall, people were eating him, and that's the best way to go if he's just going to get shocked and get electrocuted. Might as well eat him up. The kids in the hall brain candy. It was made for us, but let's analyze it very objectively. I think it's a very smart comedy. I'm more on the Gene Siskel than the Roger Ebert side of it.
Agree.
I do think maybe this was something that was a little too unique for a lot of critics at the time. Mm-hmm. But you're going to give 1 through 5. I'm going to give 1 through 5 combined for best out of 10. What do you give Kids in the Hall brain candy?
I'm going to give it a 4.25. It's so funny.
If I give it a 3.75, that's an 8.
Yeah.
And I think an 8 out of 10.
That makes so much sense.
I think that's higher than most scores for this movie.
Yeah.
I think so. So, yes, underrated comedy. Maybe one of the best underrated comedies. That maybe won all month. And this is one that we've always loved, but it's good to...
Because we're cool.
It's good to...
I choked on that.
Yeah, because it was bullshit. So check it out. A respectable... An 8 comedy. I think it's well deserved. Someone did post it on YouTube, but I'll put a link to it. But yes, Kids in the Hall Brain Candy, directed by Kelly Macon from 1996. It rests comfortably in our 8. It's an A-tier movie, A-tier comedy. Unique. And it rests in between It Follows and Kiss Me Deadly. So it's in good company there. So next week we'll be talking about more comedic flops and reanalyzing them decades later. But on Mondays, to hit up some vintage selections, we picked up a classic comedian actor. We're talking about his movies for 3 Mondays in a row. We're talking about Jerry Lewis. And the Jerry Lewis movies are the only movies all month that actually made money. So his didn't flop. You may wonder why, looking back and looking at classic senses of humor, but no, Jerry Lewis made a lot of money for well over a decade, and we're going to be watching 3 of his movies. Yeah. So check the show notes for links, other places to find us. Like, subscribe, leave a comment, corrections. Tell us what you think about. Kids all definitely have their avid fans out there, and we ain't getting any younger, but tell us what you think about Brain Candy. Or did you go see Brain Candy having no idea who these guys were?
I would love.
if you're one of those people and you happen to be watching or hearing this, then tell us about it. What did you think about
it? Yeah.
But let's get the F out of here.
Justice for Ishtar.
Took him by the throat. It choked him off. It choked.